But it works both ways too, right? I mean, obviously, somebody who's selling who's a complete jerk probably isn't going to get too far with us because the process is just too difficult. So most of our clients are great people anyway. But there are some people who have just magnetic personalities. And for this deal, I think one of the first times you experimented by doing more video conferencing between buyers and sellers on that. How did that impact the deal, and what should buyers take away from, boy, these guys want to do a video conference. Should I turn on my camera or should I? I don't know. I don't really have good lighting for this and a good setup for it.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
It seems that with some Quiet Light brokerage listings, as soon as they hit the marketplace, there's just an absolute mad rush of buying activity towards those listings. Now, to be clear, most of the listings that we put out at Quiet Light Brokerage, the vast majority, in fact, would be an exception to the rule, is going to receive at least 100 inquiries from buyers and calls right away. So what does it look like when we come across a quote unquote hot listing? Well, it looks like a lot of conference calls scheduled very, very shortly, and just a mad rush of inquiries, probably upwards of 200 to 250 within the first 24 hours in some cases. What's the difference between a listing that is not as hot like that, that gets only 100 to 150, which is still a lot, and something that doubles that? Joe, I know you launched a listing 3 or 4 weeks ago from the time that we're recording this episode that we would definitely throw in that hot category. What were the top line statistics on that?
Let's call it a 95 to 98% Amazon business. It was 30 months old. It was in the category of America's fastest growing recreational sports. It was run by a single owner operator that was a stay-at-home dad that was a CPA by training, yet outsourced the bookkeeping to an e-commerce bookkeeper. $440,000 in discretionary earnings, and we went out at a 3.3, which is lower than my recommendation. But in this case, the conservative CPA said, no, I don't want it to be listed for too long. Really like to get it sold. Can we go out at a 3? I suggested a 3.5. Rarely does somebody come back and say, can you sell it for less? And he did in this case, and we ended up $9.
The guy sounds like one of these unbelievably likable guys. How many inquiries did you get within that first 24 hours?
I didn't count the first 24, but I know that you and I were in Dallas and on the way to Houston for a meeting, and I think we pulled it up, and within the first 4 hours, we had something like 185. So within the first 24, I think it probably doubled to, close to 400. That would be my guess.
That is insane. Now, I do remember, obviously, these are all loaded questions. So anyone listening, I know the answers to most of these questions.
No, he doesn't. He forgot them all. He can't.
I was introduced, by the way, this is completely complete diversion here. So sidebar, I was introduced at a group of CEOs yesterday. And in front of the entire group of CEOs, the guy that introduced me said, and Mark, by the way, took his son. They have 7 kids, or they're expecting their 7th kid. And he has so many kids, he forgets their birthdays because he took his son to urgent care the other day and he got his birthday wrong. I'm like, thank you for that. So glad to be known as the guy who forgets his kids' birthdays.
That's a lot of kids, man.
I got the month right. I didn't get the year or day right. I know the answer to these. We were in the car together and your phone was blowing up. We were at a conference. You were trying to schedule out all of these people wanting conference calls, and you did this right over the conference itself, which maybe we can talk about in just a little bit here. Within that first 24 hours, if you were to just guess, how many conference call requests did you get?
Well, let's keep in mind that our process requires that the buyer either speak to me first before requesting a conference call, or we've spoken in the past. So in this case, in the first 24 hours, I had at least 10 requests for conference calls with buyers that I've already spoken to in the past that have looked at prior listings of ours, and they wanted to make sure they were on a call with this one. We wound up with a total of 15. As I said, the owner of the business, Paul, he's a stay-at-home dad. It's funny, and I don't know if they love this or just love making fun of Paul for this, but he's a stay-at-home dad. right? His son is a couple years old, but he takes his son to daycare at 8 and picks him up at 5. So I'm not sure how stay at home that is. Anyway, so, but the beautiful thing is that he, maybe Paul, if you're listening, I'm sorry, maybe it's 9 to 4 and you expanded it. Either way, you're a great guy. People love you and your business. I am not getting a Christmas card from Paul this year.
I'm sure you are.
Anyway, he was able to clear his calendar, which was great. I was getting so inundated and I was at e-commerce fuel. And I'm like, I can't do these conference calls. And I had said to Paul on the way through e-commerce fuel, look, I want to bump this launch a week. Because it's going to get crazy and I'm not going to be able to get on these conference calls. He's like, oh, really? Come on. I really want to get it launched. And tugged at my heartstrings. So we launched it anyway. So I took the 2 days. It launched on a Wednesday, I think. And I took Thursday and Friday. And all I did was talk to folks and scheduled the calls for the following week. Paul cleared his calendar. We set up a link so that people could just grab a link and schedule them. We did a max of 3 a day. Separated by at least an hour a piece. And we wound up, I think by Monday, close of business, we had all 15 slots scheduled. We capped it at 15, which was really 5 too many. You just don't have to have that many conference calls. Normally we have 3 to 5 conference calls and we have at least one acceptable offer. Here we had 15 scheduled and we wound up with 9.
These were 45 minute slots or were they hour long slots?
They were hour long slots. I go with an hour.
So just to put this in perspective for people that have not been on the sell side, I know I had this with a listing last year that I represented where it was just a really favorable price on the business. And so we had that 15 conference call sort of scenario that we were doing in 1 week. For anyone on the receiving end of that, our clients, the sellers, that's exhausting to go from one conference call to the next, an hour where you're being asked the same questions. And you're doing the majority of the talking during that time. This might be a little bit beside the fact, but how did he hold up throughout all those calls?
He did pretty well. They were spread out, which was nice. He usually had a minimum of an hour, but usually it was 2 or 3 hours in between. And we had one drop out, so it ended up being 14. But he did pretty well. He had to keep moving around the house. That particular week, his son was home because he got a fever a couple of days before, and he was quite sick, so he couldn't take him to daycare. And his mother flew up from Arizona to be with his son while he moved around the house to be in an appropriate place to do the conference calls. Most of the time, he was actually in the nursery doing the conference calls from his laptop.
All right. So I want to get into a couple big topics here. I want to talk about what were the characteristics that made this business, and you already talked a little bit about this, but what were the characteristics that made this business so attractive? Because I also know that we suggested to Paul going out at a 3.5. He's the one that wanted 3.3 for the asking price on this. And that's the multiple that we're asking on the earnings. So I want to go into what was it that made this such a hot listing where people just needed to look at the teaser that we gave, and that alone generated, you know, 200 plus inquiries within the first 24 hours. So what's going on there? And then second, I want to go through a little bit more of the process that you went through in selecting the buyers that were going to get those conference calls, because out of 250, finding 15, you know, I know a lot of buyers out there would be like, well, how would I become one of those 15 if I'm going to be competing against this? And then last, I mean, this is kind of the darker side now, or the bad side, I guess, of what we have to do when you have a hot listing like this, is we have to disappoint a number of people that actually really want this business but lose out in their bid for it. So I want to go over those three categories with you. And then obviously, Joe, you know, you're better at this podcasting thing than I am. So if there's something I'm missing, let me know.
Can you repeat that last part again, please?
You are better at this podcasting thing than I am, but I still have the number one episode. Thank you.
And 2 and 3, yes, you've got them all. But you do the title, so I think there's a little trickery going on.
I used to do the promotion too, so your podcasts. Pretty easy formula for number one.
You talk about the four pillars: risk, growth, transferability, and documentation. And when you go through these things, Paul's business just checks all of these off, and all the subcategories within those checks them all off. He owned his own brand. He developed it himself. It's in a niche that is out there, and there are other brands, but he specifically chose a niche within a larger niche to serve a certain segment of these people. to start with, right? So there's a growth opportunity to go. He picked the sort of beginners in the sport. He didn't go at the top end of the product. He went with a middle of the road product that beginners, price point that beginners would enjoy. So right away, you could say, okay, well, I'm learning this business and now I'm going to take this to the new level and go with the more professional people that play this sport. You know, it's not quite professional, but retired professionals can play it. So he did a really nice job there in picking the category. It was just by happenstance. He happened to be on vacation visiting his folks in Arizona and saw this game that they were playing. Thought, what the heck is that? Looked it up, studied it, researched it, and saw it growing like crazy and chose to go in that category. Registered trademark, beautiful brand, beautiful packaging. And again, let the business age. We'd been talking for probably 9 months. And it was getting close to the 24-month mark, but we got through, you know, that Christmas holiday season. This particular business is not fourth quarter heavy seasonal. It's actually better in the spring and summer months. So we got prior to the spring and summer months so that a new owner would have great advantage with an upswing in the summer months. It was clean books, SBA eligible, which helps cast a broader net. Probably half the offers, I can't say half because there were nine, so four out of the nine offers, five out of the nine were SBA offers. The growth trends were fantastic, you know, 80, 90, 100% year over year, month over month growth. It looked really good comparing month to month from year to year. Transferability, super easy, right? He owned the brand. He wasn't reselling anything. He had good relationships with his manufacturers and the documentation, of course, good SOPs in place. He did it all himself. So there weren't VAs that were commingled with anybody else or people that worked from his house or anything like that that needed to transfer. The sort of intangible thing that I think took this to the next level is the person behind the business. He's not transferring with the business, but he is so, so likable and so trustworthy. Just the full story behind him. And I'm not suggesting that everybody goes and becomes a CPA, quits their job and works from home, stay at home dad. But you know, people want to invest in a business and buy something from somebody that they like and they trust. As you know, Mike Jackness said on a call recently, you have to be a good human being in order to get the deal done. It needs to work for both parties. And just describing who Paul is and then how he is in the video and how he came across, he's just a good person and people wanted to buy the business from him.
Yeah, I'm looking at the teaser right now. It's cool if I read some of the teaser, right?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So I'm just looking at this. This is selfish on my part. Next listing I put out, I want to get 250 inquiries because that's awesome, right? I mean, that's great for our clients. All right. So I'm looking through this and let's look through it through the prism of those four pillars of risk, growth, transferability, documentation. Risk, Amazon businesses, this is primarily Amazon. The biggest thing that I find, and maybe you would disagree, is that it needs to be defensible, right? Against competition, right? Yeah. And right in here, I see towards the bottom, there's a trademark and the brand is brand registered. There we go. There are over 2,000 reviews. These are getting harder and harder to fake. So you're speaking towards the main risk that people associate with Amazon right away. People are thinking, oh, awesome. That's great. Growth, this rapidly growing, you lead this with this rapidly growing is one of America's, is situated one of America's fastest growing sports. So A, this business is growing. B, this niche is growing. Two really good things. So growth is checked off pretty easily. You have some other stuff in here. Transferability. The owner, single owner, dedicates approximately 15 hours per week running the business. I could do that, right? Mm-hmm. Who can't do 15 hours a week on something? And then lastly, documentation. The owner is a former CPA. Do you need to say anything else? I think you checked each of those boxes like with a giant red check mark to say, you know, everyone looking at this, this thing's going to check all of these boxes and become really valuable. And it turned out, surprisingly enough, to be true. These four pillars work.
Yeah, they do. They do. And, you know, one of the pillars is it's growth, but within that is growth opportunities and growth trends. And the opportunities, and I'll dig into the package itself and can't quite remember, but he had launched new SKUs in 2018. And so, you know, we look at the revenue, when did he launch those, and the revenue by SKU during that time period. And it was clear that some of these SKUs had gained some traction in 2018, but they hadn't been available for the full 12 months. So that's a built-in path to growth. So it's one other thing that buyers like. And then when you, I mean, that teaser, it obviously checks all of those four pillars. But then when you get into the package and we, you know, we record a video, a video interview with him via Zoom, like we're doing now. Obviously, people listen to mostly audio, but we do the video as well. And he's in his home. You know, you can see the kitchen in the background, and he's got the packaging, and he holds up the packaging. It's just beautiful. It's a really nice product. And this is, again, hard for people to duplicate, but this particular product, it's just cool. It's just a cool niche and a cool place to be. And he did a really nice job of the packaging. He did everything right as far as I'm concerned, and obviously as far as buyers are concerned as well.
Yeah. One thing I want to touch on here, because we talk about this a lot for buyers, that you want to be likable and come across well to the potential seller. But it works both ways too, right? I mean, obviously, somebody who's selling who's a complete jerk probably isn't going to get too far with us because the process is just too difficult. So most of our clients are great people anyway. But there are some people who have just magnetic personalities. And for this deal, I think one of the first times you experimented by doing more video conferencing between buyers and sellers on that. How did that impact the deal, and what should buyers take away from, boy, these guys want to do a video conference. Should I turn on my camera or should I? I don't know. I don't really have good lighting for this and a good setup for it.
Do it. One of the best calls we had was with a guy named Noah, and he hadn't planned on doing video because he was on his dad's party boat. Now, Noah's, you know, 35 years old, but he's helping his father move this big boat from one port to another because it's being sold. And Paul and I are on video, and we said video is optional. It said it's recommended, but optional. And he's like, well, both you guys are there. He goes, kind of embarrassed. I'm on my dad's boat. I'm on a boat. We're like, we have to see it. Turn it on.
That's great.
And his dad was in the background moving stuff around. He's shooing him out of the frame. It was fantastic. So Noah was likable and memorable, and that stuck with Paul. Paul wanted to sell the business to Noah at the end of the call. So that makes a huge difference. Not everybody did it. There were two or three that were in the top three, you know? Now, obviously three were in the top three, but two or three that stuck out. Two of them did video. One of them didn't do video. The very first person that we had the call with, he chose not to do video. He made a great offer, and we came close on having him, but Paul ended up choosing someone else. But I think you do the video. I'm doing it more and more. And if you've got an opportunity as a buyer to do a video, if your broker allows that, then by all means, do it.
And I think on the sell side, this is something, just a note to people listening, we're going to be doing this more and more because it really makes a difference on the sell side as well. Like sellers most likely will be doing video. And I love that he was able to just hold up some of the product on the video to be able to show it there directly. I mean, how cool is that?
People are, they're buying a business potentially just based upon the black and white information that we put in a package. It's worked for years, but we moved to doing videos in the interviews and making it part of the full business summary, 24 months ago. I remember doing the very first one. It was horrible. I just did audio, actually, and I recorded it on my phone, and it was horrible, but beneficial. And now we've moved beyond that to video. You get to look relatively in the whites of someone's eyes and gauge whether you trust them or not. And if you're going to put your life savings on the line and buy their business. And I think it just makes a tremendous amount of difference.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. And again, this is coming from somebody myself that does not like video, doing video personally. Like I tend to be one of those shut the camera off types of guys, but more and more warming up to it and definitely getting more accustomed to it as well. So that's pretty cool. And also the yacht story, by the way, I know our content director, Chris Moore, and Chris, I know you're listening to this. You're going to hate this, that I'm saying this, but some of the most memorable conversations I've had with people have been in the oddest places. The podcast with Chad Annis, where he was in his RV, you know, and I could see the pine trees out in the background, or Andrew from ECF Live, e-commerce fuel, awesome forum. He was in his van holding up a microphone. I'm like, this is great. It's just this weird background that only entrepreneurs understand.
Exactly. It's classic entrepreneur stuff. You know, people, when I'm having calls with them and valuations, and you hear the dog barking in the background, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, you're an entrepreneur. You're going to hear mine any minute. This is the life that we live. It's great. So back to the points, the last point I want to make in terms of what makes a difference, made a difference with this particular business, I think is the images. Paul provided me with great images for the package. And he had them because he had, you know, professional photography, and it helped. Obviously, everyone knows that runs an Amazon business what a difference good images make. But he had great images of packaging, of the product being used by human beings having fun and all that stuff. And I was able to sort of litter them throughout the package, and it just brought the whole thing to life. And I think that made a bit of a difference too.
Yeah, you know, something I've said over the years, I've told you, Joe, and the others here at Quiet Light, is that the summary packages that we put together are supposed to tell a story of the business. And I look for that with every business I represent. Like, what is the thread that I want to tell here? What is the common thread throughout this? The data and everything else supports a story. And hey, people love stories, right? That's what we're all drawn to them.
Right. And you just said data. I just want to say one more thing. I keep looking at the package and I'm like, oh, there's another thing. One more thing that he gave me was data. Data from the outside world that proved that this is one of America's fastest growing recreational sports. So I was able to link to outside magazine articles and newspaper articles and outside sources that backed up what he was saying and what I was saying in the package, which is really, really helpful.
Okay. I might regret this question because I don't want to go long on the episode here, but you've said more than once that he was just a really likable guy. Do you know what made him likable? It's such a hard question to ask, right? How can somebody be more likable than another person? But we've identified when Walker did an acquisition through Quiet Light Brokers, thanking the seller, taking the time to thank our client and saying, thank you for agreeing to sell me your business, and how much of a difference that made at that point. Was there anything that kind of stood out outside of the video that really made him stand apart?
He was who we described him to be, which was a CPA, a stay-at-home dad, and honest and uncomfortable in front of the camera and vulnerable and real. He never watched the video that I did with him. I told him, he's like, I might watch it. He goes, I hope that was okay. I was really conscious here and there. And like, well, let's not watch it because you were great. You were human. You were real. And I'm not editing anything out of it. And I'm not redoing it because you were great. People are going to love you because you're just normal. And he never watched it. I don't know if I'll have to ask him if he's gone back and watched it since we've got it under contract. But he was just real. Just real and honest. And he wasn't selling. He was just stating the facts. And that's one of the things that we do. I get excited. So maybe it feels like selling, but stating the facts is what he did. Didn't try to pitch or sell. He was just being himself. Likeable.
Yeah, that's, I think I heard this somewhere recently, that authenticity among like millennials. And I would broaden that out and say among those within the internet realm, because we've seen so much stuff that it's so easy to gloss over and make yourself look bigger or better or more polished than you are. I think people within the internet world, we tend to value authenticity a bit more than people might think. And so that vulnerability, I think, is key. And not saying that you put on a show of like, oh, look at me, I'm all vulnerable. Hey, look, if you are really confident in what you're doing, be confident, be true to who you are. That comes through. You can tell that in people, right? You can tell when they're being real or when they're trying to make themselves sound better than they actually think they are.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. You want to go on to process and
there. So I want to know. So 15 conference calls. Tell me, you again, mistake that you probably made in this, and you told me this. I'm not accusing you of this. Yep. Launching a listing during two conferences. You were sick that week. You were flying to two different cities, driving to one city with me as well. So how did you manage getting that many inquiries, that many requests for conference calls with everything else going on?
Well, it actually worked out pretty well because I was not feeling well and I was at the conference and I said, I am not doing this over the next 2 days. We're going to push it all the next week. And it enabled me to communicate in writing with all the people that inquired, the people that, look, there were a couple hundred in the first few hours, of course, but those that I've spoken to before that know the process, they reached right out to me. They called me, they texted me, they emailed me and said, Joe, I want to talk to this guy. I want to get on a conference call. because they know that's the process. And so those that have, you know, followed our process, look at as many listings as possible so you know the right fit when it comes along and can act quickly, did just that and reached out to me. And so I just blocked it all off and we scheduled the calls. For the process when we had the calls, if anyone hasn't been on them, us, the broker, we talk as little as possible. We make introductions, hand the call over to the buyer to give a little bit of background on themselves and then go right into their calls. We put ourselves on mute. And in this case, I took myself off camera as well. And we listen and we jump in if we can help out. But for the most part, we stay quiet until the very end of the call. And then we just wrap things up. At the end of each day, I had a quick wrap-up call with Paul. And I said, okay, you've had three. Today, it's Monday. You've had three. Who do you like the most? And then on Tuesday, I said, all right, you've had six. Who are your top two? And the same people kept rising to the surface. Although people near the end of the week very quickly, you know, got to the surface. Noah, I think, was probably on Wednesday or Thursday. And so we ran through the process. And I think one mistake I made, Mark, in hindsight, when I look at it, I knew it was going to be a frenzy. And as much as people think, oh, multiple offer situation, you're going over asking price, et cetera. We did. Yes, we had them. And yes, we did go over asking price because we priced it right. We didn't price it too high or too low. We priced it right. And that gets more increase than anything else buyers know. We chose to go best and final. And I think in hindsight, I probably would have had two rounds so that, you know, what we did was we told everyone, we're going to have a call with every buyer. You may submit offers prior to the following Monday at noon if you wish to, but we will not be making a decision until close of business the following Tuesday. You've got to have it in by Monday at noon, and we will make a final decision, close of business Tuesday. Gave us a little time to review. Everyone gave it to us in the same exact format that I provided, so it was easy. We didn't have to interpret different offers. And most kept it simple, which is what I knew Paul was looking for and what I suggested that they do. One made it a little complex, but I know them and I know what their goals are. They're raising funds, so they've got investors to satisfy. And then tell me what you did. We gave a clear deadline of Monday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I got one that came in maybe at 4 o'clock that day and one that came in at 9 o'clock that day, p.m. with apologies and a text saying, I thought it was midnight. Would you have allowed those offers to be presented or would you have been cold and said no?
It depends on the situation. That's a tough one, especially because it's 12. Yeah, I mean, you said 12 and 12 is, I mean, you can interpret that both ways.
12, no, we had a total of 9 offers. We ended up with 14 conference calls because one fell out. We had 9 offers.
No, I mean, you put your deadline at 12.
At 12. Well, I said 12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Yeah, but then you have to think like 12 p.m. You think night and, you know, maybe I'm the only one that can't read time. But
I only speak Eastern as I tell everyone else in every other time zone. There's too many time zones and I just say Eastern. I try not to coordinate with other time zones. Anyway, no, we were accommodating. In hindsight, I think we probably should have narrowed it down to the top two or three and gone back out to them. But the reality is that when you have a seller that has multiple offers, it's hard on the seller. First, as you say, they're on, in this case, 14 conference calls that are lasting about an hour each. That's 14 hours. And then he's talking to me for 15 to 20 minutes at the end of each day as well. It's a lot of time in 1 week, more time than he spends running the business, right? 15 hours a week running it, more time selling it than running it. And then you got to make a decision based upon, we had one offer that was, let's see, it was $150,000 over asking price. Pretty wow. Big jump.
Yeah.
That one was an SBA offer. So the benefit there is that not only is it $150,000 over asking price, but it's going to take upwards of 60 days longer to close than a cash buyer. So he's going to put another $50,000 in his pocket by waiting an extra 2 months. I mean, just a cash windfall, right?
Yeah.
So why not take?
I want to disagree with you on something real quick before we get too far away from this point. Because
is it back to me being the better podcaster or something else?
I'm going to save that to the end after this, because I think I'm doing such a stellar job at this interview.
You're doing great.
It's easy when you know the person you're interviewing and you know the story as well. But what I'm going to disagree with you on is, should you have gone a second round with the offers? Okay, that would be the standard process when you're not expecting multiple offers. And when maybe, like if I have a listing that's been sitting around for a month and, you know, we narrow down and we happen to have three buyers that kind of coalesce around the same time, then it makes sense because the buyers don't know that they're in a competitive situation. But and I might sound a little harsh here, but hey, if you're a buyer and you're in a situation where you know it is competitive, and the buyers in this case knew it was competitive, that there was a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
My guidance has been the same. Like, put in your best and final. There's two sides to that coin. The one side is don't try and necessarily get a discount because the market is going to speak. It is going to push that price up necessarily. And two, don't overbid what you're comfortable bidding. Find out, you know, if I get it at this price, I'm going to be happy or satisfied at least. If I go above, I'm always going to wonder if I paid too much. Find that, make the offer, get it done. So I actually think that you did the right thing by doing one round instead of two rounds. I would recommend the two round again if it was kind of a surprise, multiple offer situation.
Well, I think, you know, I had one person tell me they wish there was a second round, but it was crystal clear in writing in black and white that it was best and final. And so, you know, I took his suggestion and constructive criticism in a way that I thought maybe was worthwhile and we could do a second round next time possibly. But when you're in a multiple offer situation, it's emotional for the seller. Believe it or not, people, it's hard. It's hard for the broker as well. So, you know, I just want to reemphasize one thing that you said, and that is you don't want people to get the buyers to get emotional in their offer. You know, we want them to make an offer that they're going to be happy with after they're under letter of intent, because we want two happy individuals at closing, the buyer and the seller. It has to be a good transaction for both of them. So we don't want them to overbid. So we work really hard to make sure that they're making an offer that they're comfortable with it, with that, assuming everything's good in due diligence, that we'll get all the way through to closing with.
Yeah. And I think if you're a seller out there thinking, well, why wouldn't you want to get something above what they're comfortable with? The reason is simple. The offer is the beginning of a longer journey, right? You got to go through that due diligence. You got to go through transition planning. There's a lot of time in there for those cold feet to really, really freeze up a little bit. And for the buyer to say, I made a mistake. I got caught up in the heat of the passion. And now, yeah. And I want to emphasize one other thing that you said here, and that is, we think multiple offers is a really good situation, and it is, but for anyone that hasn't been in that situation before where you have multiple buyers, all of whom are very qualified to buy your business and giving you good offers, it's really tough to choose because you can't choose five offers. You got to choose one.
Yep.
And in your head, you're going to be thinking, I got to get this right because I don't want to go through this again, or I don't want to go through this due diligence process and then have to go back. And what are people going to think if I have to go back? So it's actually really stressful and one of those good problems to have, but still a problem.
And that's where, you know, I think the video, the folks that did video, you know, a better connection with Paul a little bit, although one of the top three didn't do the video, but just a super nice guy. I mean, Paul wanted him to be able to buy the business. Travels all over the country all the time and has two teenagers that he just doesn't see enough, and he wants to work from home.
And so there was that personal connection.
Well, it's that personal connection is, you know, tugging at Paul's emotional, you know, heartstrings, at mine. I think he's a great guy. I would love to help him find an amazing business so he spends more time with his family and becomes an entrepreneur, which he's not now. He's in the corporate world.
All right. We're getting close to the episode. So let's wrap up. I want to get to the end here and talk about
sad news. I'm sorry. Sad news. Having to tell eight people they didn't get it.
Well, that, and also I want to know the metrics. So, because I know you had recommended to him, go out. We should go out at a 3.5 multiple. We covered that at the beginning. He said, I don't know if we need to do that. You know, that's, you know, Dang and Paul sound like a great guy. 3.3 is what it went out at. I'd like to know where the highs and lows came in, and then also the sad news portion, having to tell so many people that wanted this business, you know, sorry, we're going to keep you in mind. We'll keep looking for you.
Yeah. Again, I wanted to go out at 3.5. I thought it was worth a push, and I let him know it's a bit of a risk. We haven't, you know, sold one at 3.5. That's 100% Amazon business with discretionary earnings, this quote unquote low. It's still 440,000. We wound up with the highest one being at 3.6, 150,000 over asking. And the one that he chose was $50,000 over asking at a 3.4, 3.41. And it was an all cash buyer, had the funds on hand, had the funds and had the experience and has bought Amazon businesses before. So he looked at the full package, cash buyer, close in 30 days, hiring Centurica for due diligence, but understands Amazon really well, and that training and transition was going to be a breeze. It's the full package. And that's why he chose that particular buyer.
Yeah. Again, we've talked about before about people winning with lower bids, not necessarily being the top bidder, but still being able to win. And we've also talked about the idea that the financial motivation isn't always the sole motivation, right? People sell for a variety of reasons. And so being able to understand as a buyer, understand some of those secondary goals can really help you out quite a bit.
Let me just jump in. It's not always a cash buyer that wins as well. As if everybody remembers the story, I've had Syed Balki on the podcast, and he chose a buyer that was an SBA buyer at full price on his business versus a cash buyer, because he just really bonded with that SBA buyer, and he carried a 10% seller note on that particular listing too. So he chose an SBA buyer and a seller note over an all cash buyer. So SBA wasn't necessarily the problem. It was just a combination of a number of things. And Paul really wanted to get the business sold, and is kind of a nervous guy a little bit. So he didn't want to have to wait upwards of 90 days. 30 was comfortable.
All right. What final things should people know about this particular deal? Because this is a fascinating little case study of just a listing that's going crazy, how to act on the buy side, also how to set your business up from the sell side. So what final things should we probably round this episode out with?
Well, I hate to finish it with, you know, just because this one, you know, sold at a 3.4 doesn't mean yours is worth 3.4. This one has all of these little points and metrics to it. I launched one this week, Monday, at 3.3. And some of those same buyers, those eight buyers, a few of them have looked at it and said no. Others are comfortable with the niche and like it and see the upside to it. So I think we'll get at or close to asking. But, you know, just being prepared, running a real business, think about it from a buyer's point of view. They're going to be investing their life savings. And if you were them, what type of business and what type of person would they want to buy that business from? We want them to succeed. You want them to succeed. And that's really what you need to focus on.
That's fantastic. Hey, thanks for sharing all of this. I know that you always have the best case studies, mainly because you do the most deals at Quiet Light. So thanks for sharing this one. Next one, I'm going to write a better teaser than yours, and I'm going to try and get like 251 inquiries in the first 24 hours.
You taught me how to do it, so I know you can do it.
Well, I'll make sure that I let you know on every podcast. All right, cool. Hey, thanks, Joe. I appreciate all of it.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.